The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Okay, Tov. Good, thank you, Kathy. How are you guys doing? It sounds like Howard's in good form today. It's going to be an interesting discussion by the sounds of things.
Yes, Howard Sackstein's with me. So, Anthony, the IDF has announced that two separate investigations will be launched into the botched operations in Gaza that resulted in the death of an Israeli officer and the recent escalation of violence with Hamas. So what will the investigations be focused on?
Well, we're not exactly sure of all the details, and there's still a lot of smoke and mirrors that surrounds the incident that triggered the whole sort of escalation of violence that we saw a few weeks ago. We do know that there was some sort of an operation going on in Gaza at the time. Apparently, it was being carried out by the elite Sayeret Matkal unit, one of the most elite units in the army. They were involved in doing something which we're not exactly sure about. But if we believe what Hamas is saying, then they are claiming that the unit was somehow trying to plant listening devices into very, very sensitive places. And during the time that they were there, in other words, this unit had actually entered Gaza, and we understand that they'd entered Gaza through a regular checkpoint. So they'd gone through a regular guarded Israeli checkpoint. They were obviously dressed up in a way that would not identify them as IDF soldiers. And they went into Gaza, apparently, according to Hamas, with the intention of planting listening devices into these very, very sensitive areas. As it turns out, during the process of this operation, they were found out. They were identified as being IDF soldiers. It's not clear exactly how that happened. And then ensued a gunfight in which the senior person from Hamas, Khan Yunis, was actually killed. And also the Israeli officer who remains still unidentified officially. I know that his name has been circulated on social media, which I think is irresponsible given the fact that the military sense is still doing whatever they can in order to conceal the identity of that person. And I think that the reason that they're wanting to conceal the identity is because it could potentially harm further operations that the IDF are carrying out, whether they be in Gaza or elsewhere. So that man's name still remains under military censorship at the moment. But he was killed. And then we saw this huge escalation where hundreds of missiles were launched from the Gaza Strip into Israel. And so what we understand, what I've heard behind the scenes about these investigations is apparently that a lot of sensitive information may well have been captured by Hamas during that whole incident. At the time that those soldiers were in Gaza, at the time that they were found out, and then there was this exchange of fire, I understand that there was the potential for the capture of very, very sensitive information that they were that they had at their disposal, which could potentially endanger many other things that the IDF is up to at the moment. So I believe that one of the investigations, at least, is going to focus on exactly what information was captured and what the implications could be moving forward for the IDF and for their future operations, whether they be in Gaza or indeed elsewhere around Israel's borders. The other investigation, from what I can gather, is going to look at a general kind of focus on how could this happen? What did the IDF do that should have been better? How can this be improved for future operations that are carried out of a similar nature? Is there a fundamental error in the way that the IDF are carrying out these very, very sensitive undercover operations to see whether they can be improved? And it's interesting that this investigation has been launched by Lieutenant General Gadi Eisenkot, the Chief of General Staff, which will report directly to him, and it will also report to the head of military intelligence. And this is, of course, in Gadi Eisenkot's final weeks as Chief of General Staff. He's due to hand over the reins very, very soon, sometime in January, to his successor. And so this will be one of the final acts that he will carry out. And the investigations are not going to last very long. They're going to be very quick and short, and they're going to have to report their findings very, very quickly indeed. So all of this is quite interesting and just reconfirms what we've suspected, which is that there was some sort of an error in the operation that was being carried out in Gaza, and there are a lot of questions that need to be answered about that.
Very interesting. 10 years ago yesterday, the 27th of November, 2008, was the attack on the Beit Chabad in Mumbai. I remember that day like I was there. I remember it because it was Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and it was also the day that Chai FM started broadcasting for the first time. Anthony, what has happened to the terrorists who were involved and some of the people who were involved since then?
Well, in terms of the terrorists, I haven't exactly been following what's happened to those individuals. But what I have been following is an interesting story following the young boy, the young son of Rabbi Holzberg and his wife Rivka, both of whom were killed in the Chabad house in Mumbai. And the little boy Moshe, who was kind of the center part of the story in terms of the miracle that happened amongst the tragedy that transpired on that day. And not only that young Moshe, who was at that time 2 years old, actually survived, but in fact the story about how he survived is still an astonishing story,
yeah.
Which is that his nanny, an Indian lady, Sandra Samuel, took him and hid him away so that he would not be part of the terrorist attack that took place in the rest of the house. And she saved his life. There can be absolutely no doubt about this fact that this nanny saved his life. And as a result of that, the Israeli government has given Sandra Samuel citizenship of Israel. She is an Israeli citizen, and she lives in Jerusalem. And she goes every week from Jerusalem to Afula to visit her, what she calls her Moshe boy, her boy that she saved, who has grown up with his grandparents in Afula, to be what is considered to be a fine young man. And apparently there is a plan that he will have his bar mitzvah at Chabad House in Mumbai next year. So that will clearly be very, very emotional for everybody concerned. But I think it's an astonishing story that Sandra Samuel became an Israeli citizen, that she is working and living in Jerusalem, that she's a caregiver for children with special needs and for disabled children. And I think it's an amazing story that she still has this connection with Moshe, and they ensure that she gets to see him every week despite the distance between Jerusalem and Afula, which is not insubstantial, and it's quite difficult to get there. And she's become something of a hero when Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi visited Israel some time ago. Then she was one of the people who was brought out to meet him. She's still something of a hero both in Israel and in India. And she does say that she will return to India at some point. She does have grown-up children there, and she will return to India at some point. But for now, at least, she's living and working in Jerusalem. And, you know, she's still a hero for the amazing reactions that she had at that time to save this young boy. And he will grow up, you know, never to forget the legacy that his parents left, which I think is a great thing, even though it's very sad that he has to grow up as an orphan. But he will never forget the work that his parents did and what they represented in terms of, you know, the overall Chabad structure.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a few years ago that I actually I interviewed the Holzbergs. This is the parents of Rabbi and Mrs. Holzberg. And they've started a fund to help rebuild the Chabad of Mumbai. And it it's so extraordinary how somebody can take so much pain and channel it into something so positive, Anthony. Anyway.
It's very true. I mean, they've done an astonishing job to move forward from that tragedy and to raise this young boy.
Yeah.
I understand that Beit Chabad in Mumbai continues to operate, even though it still has the damage, the pockmarks from that attack are still there. But that, you know, the Chabad house continues to operate. And, you know, the whole story is a real story of survival and, in a way, some miracles because, you know, this lady, Sandra Samuel, really carried out a miracle to survive, to save that young boy.
Absolutely. The Spanish government has apologized to Israel after a water polo match was cancelled due to the influence of BDS. Really?
Now, so I don't know if the pool was being heated by solar panels or not, Howard.
No, no, this wasn't King David.
It was infected with BDS. It's like similar to E. coli.
Well, I mean, in my humble opinion, this is a classic story of BDS going mad because, you know, by causing the cancellation of a water polo game between the national women's team of Spain and the Israeli team seems to me to be kind of negative everywhere. There's nothing that positive that comes out of this. It's just simply trying to go in with a whole negative attitude. And for me, it symbolizes a lot of what BDS is about because I don't see this helping anybody in any way. I would, you know, be prepared to give some consideration to their actions if I felt that they were somehow helping a cause, any cause, whatever the cause might be. But this is clearly not. And what happened was that the sports minister, the Spanish sports minister, has been forced to apologize to his counterpart, Miri Regev, Israel's sports minister, for the cancellation of this match. Apparently what happened was that the swimming pool that hosted the game was the one that actually got involved, was influenced by BDS, and at one point refused to host the match at all. And then during the negotiations that pursued, they decided that they would host the match as long as no team displays its national flag, which is a clear violation of the team's rights under the Water Polo International Federation Charter. And the Israeli team quite rightly decided that they would not play under those circumstances. If they could not play under their national flag, they would prefer not to play. And I very much support that point of view. And then eventually there was an idea that the match would be played without any audience watching it. And, you know, this is just a very, very sad state of affairs. But I think it's indicative of what's going on in Spain. And interestingly, Spain is one country which seems to have been most impacted in a way that BDS has its most influence across Spain. Apparently, there's something like 50 Spanish municipalities that have endorsed the principles of BDS, which is the highest number of any European country. And in fact, this is despite the fact that a Spanish court has recently defined BDS as discriminatory. And nonetheless, it seems to still have this influence. We've had previous stories of Israeli orchestras and musicians and performers not being allowed to perform in Spanish cities because of the influence of BDS. So, you know, again, I don't really like to give them a lot of airtime, but it is nice that the Spanish sports minister has come out and recognized the wrong that has been committed here and has publicly apologized. And I just sense that BDS is being weakened in some parts, although clearly in Spain it remains quite strong for now, at least.
Yeah, Anthony, I saw a story this morning. Do you remember after Pittsburgh, the Muslim community raised a lot of money for the victims? Do you remember seeing that? It was such a positive story.
I do remember,
at the time.
Absolutely.
So this morning I'm seeing people actually tweeting that $10,000 was given to, of the money raised, was given to the victims of the Pittsburgh shootings, and $155,000 went to the Islamic Center. Did you know about this? Maybe we can talk about it tomorrow morning.
I did not know about it. I knew that there had been something like $200,000 raised from two Muslim organizations. I remember that. But I haven't seen what they've actually done with the money. So, yeah, let's have a look at it and let's talk about it tomorrow. And, of course, I encourage listeners out there to weigh in with their opinions and, you know, to let me know if they want me to talk about something in particular. Please do write in and let me know. I'm happy to hear your thoughts and your requests.
Anthony Reich, always a pleasure to speak to you. Look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. And it's Wednesday, just saying.